Thank you, Marta, for inviting me to participate in this session. I have no disclosures to report. Actually, I also want to, the NCI has asked me to announce that you come visit the booth. It's number 1220, and right after this session, there will be a Meet the Experts session, and they have lots of information about different programs over the course of the APHA meeting. Okay. Public health has benefited greatly from the use of large-scale probability health surveys. For efficiency, these surveys use complex designs, and despite progress in software development to address analysis issues, there are still problems that arise that are not fully addressed. Okay. I will report on four issues, solutions, from the National Cancer Institute experience with its sponsored tobacco use supplement to the current population survey, or as we use the abbreviation TUS-CPS, which it uses to address tobacco control. I'll be talking about four problems and maybe some solutions. The first one's complex survey multi-level data analysis. The second is bridging race estimates for changes in the number of race categories reported. Then adjusting weights for partial longitudinal follow-up of survey samples. And this actually relates a little bit to what Jack Barnett was talking about when you have the issue of follow-up. And finally, a few words on merging data with different numbers of replicate weights. First, I'm going to give you some background on the tobacco use supplement, the CPS, which is relevant to the four issues that I will be discussing, since this is the data that we've used. Okay, first, it's a key source of U.S. national and state-level data on tobacco use and tobacco control policy. It also provides some information on sub-state-level information. It's a supplement to the Bureau of Labor Statistics' current population survey, conducted by the Census Bureau. The CPS uses a national complex probability address-based sample of households. So the coverage issues with random digit dialing is not an issue here. The CPS is actually conducted monthly, and it uses a panel design for efficiency of sampling. It provides detailed statistics on demography, labor force, and unemployment information. And actually, it's a key critical resource for indicators of the economy, providing the monthly quoted unemployment rates that you hear. And I believe they had just released the October data in last Friday, which was sort of a little bit encouraging. Okay. The tobacco use supplement itself is fielded about every 3 years, and we've been sponsoring this supplement, National Cancer Institute, since 1992. Each round, which really consists of 3 months of data, 4 months apart, so that we have about 240,000 unique individuals per wave. We were looking at 15 plus. Now in 2007, we restricted the age to 18 plus because of a lot of problems with non-response at the younger ages. 70% of the actual interviews are conducted by the telephone. They're not random digit dialing. Remember, this is still address-based, but the actual interview is done by telephone. And 30% are in-person visits. And this is based on the panel design of the CPS. We've translated the tobacco use supplement into Spanish, so we have a standardized instrument in the field. We also did some work on four Asian languages, looking at cross-cultural issues on survey questions that are probably a little bit more related to reliability and validity of questions. And we have that information actually on our website. The four Asian translations are not actually used in the field, but they're available for researchers who are actually trying to get translated questions in tobacco. The TUS is really a unique resource. It tracks trends in tobacco use over time, evaluates tobacco control programs. It allows us to monitor tobacco control on the policy and macro level as well as the individual level. The three main areas in policy that's covered are workplace policies, home restrictions, and doctor-dentist advice to stop smoking. We also have used this to examine health disparities because of the broad coverage and the large sample size and detailed information on employment, occupation, and industry, and information on immigration. Of course, it still is subject to some of the limitations that Vicki Shavers mentioned earlier in terms of future considerations for detailed information on health disparities. But it's a good start, and unlike some of the other surveys, we have a large sample size. Okay. One of the most unique aspects of this is it can be linked to the other other current population survey supplements, such as internet use and the American time use supplement. This is something maybe a lot of people don't know about, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics looks at what people do. They have a 24-hour record of activities and stuff, so that's a pretty good resource, and you can actually match and merge the data. The other thing is the March supplement, which is the annual social and economic supplement. That's conducted every March, and that has detailed economic information, including some health insurance information. And while it may not get into all the details like Vicki was mentioning, there is information on the Medicaid side as well as private. And lastly, there's a National Longitudinal Mortality Study, which is a number of years ago, the Census Bureau, a number of institutes at NIH, and the National Center for Health Statistics, CDC, got together because they had a joint interest in looking at social determinants of health. And so they have done a combined follow-up of several decades of information from the CPS, and they actually do a passive follow-up of mortality and actually cancer incidence from SEER. So the tobacco use supplement actually has been part of this cohort, so people who are interested in looking at health outcomes can utilize this data as well. Okay. Problem. Okay. Multi-level analysis of complex survey data. The example I give of the problem we ran into and our sort of simplistic solution comes from the American Stop Smoking Intervention Study for Cancer Prevention, better known as ASSIST, and it's our evaluation of smoking prevalence. Just briefly, the ASSIST project was an 8-year non-randomized demonstration project, so it wasn't a randomized trial. For tobacco use prevention and control. It was conducted by the National Cancer Institute in conjunction with the American Cancer Society, and NCI funded 17 state health departments to do this study. The goal was to change states' social, cultural, economic, and environmental factors that promote tobacco use through policy changes, mass media, and program services. And it began in 1993, and we had a baseline survey in 92-93. Okay, I'm not going to go into the details here, but I guess I can do that. ASSIST in other initiatives, there's pro-tobacco efforts, then the state's efforts to counter tobacco industry and tobacco use, and then the initial outcomes of policy. We mentioned policy changes, intermediate outcomes such as attitudes and other behaviors, and then final outcomes consisting of smoking prevalence and consumption. And so I'm going to be talking about the smoking prevalence that we used this data for. Okay. We used a regression adjustment modeling using the tobacco use supplement data. We wanted to do a two-stage adjustment procedure, maximally using the large tobacco use supplement sample size. We wanted to adjust the first stage for individual covariates that are related to the probability of being a smoker, and the second stage for state-level covariates and baseline prevalence, since this really was, the state was a unit of analysis. Okay. The issues we ran into is, well, first of all, the tobacco use supplement, public use files do not contain PSU and other design information for variance estimation. Instead, we use replica weights or available. Wait a minute, did I? Common software that's used is Sudan, Stata, and Westbar, and they cover complex survey data analysis using replicate weights. Now, I believe SAS has gotten into this business, and they have a number of procs for survey analysis, including replicate weights. However, there's no standard syntax for multi-level modeling with replicate weights. And so we had this problem of how do we do this two-level modeling. So our solution, which was pretty simple, was to conduct two-stage regression model using doing each stage separately. The first stage, we performed a logistic regression, and we adjusted using individual level covariates. Here we could actually use the sample weights. And we computed residual means for each state. And then at the second stage, we did a multiple linear regression of these means on state level covariates and exposures of interest. Okay, so this, of course, we were doing this in the 1990s, early 2000s. So one might say, well, maybe there's some other solutions. Still today, there's no standard syntax available for multi-level modeling with replicate weights. Okay, there has been this multi-level regression software, HLM, typically can incorporate main survey weights to correct point estimate bias, but can't compute correct variances. Some other researchers in this field, including in 2006, have proposed a PML estimator implemented in Stata. And also software M-Plus provides two approaches, both allowing users to specify stratification, cluster, weight, and other options in a variable command. Okay. But still, these methods still result in some bias. And while the bias may not be big for large cluster units, they may be a problem for smaller clusters, such as households. These methods could be useful for surveys that provide details about the PSUs and other design features such as segments, et cetera. However, much detail, as Vicky Shave has mentioned, is often not contained on public use files, and they may require analyses at special research development centers. Okay, the next problem I'm going to talk about is bridging race estimates for changes over time in the number of race categories that can be reported. This photo is actually was provided by one of my co-authors who used it in another presentation, so I'm thankful to him. And it's also appropriate because yesterday was the New York Marathon, and they do run over a lot, conduct the race over a lot of bridges. Okay. Based on 1997, OMB had a directive to change the race ethnicity reporting for federal agencies. Bureau of Labor Statistics and Census made the following changes. Respondents can now select more than one of five races when answering the survey. They also split the Asian race into Asian or Pacific Islander. Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander was separated from other Asian. And the ethnicity question asked directly whether respondent was Hispanic instead of asking about origin and descent. Okay, so this information or this change in reporting of race should have no effect on estimates and trends for the entire nation. However, they have potential impact on estimates and trends by race ethnicity. Thus, it's important to consider for examining health disparities. So our problem here is that we can't use the race data for post-2003 data in the same manner as the pre-2003 data. So some simple ways of thinking about this is, well, some people only report one race. Maybe we just use single race equal only category. The other option might be any mention of race. Turns out to be only about 1 to 2% of people report multiple races, but I'm going to show you how this is important when you actually are interested in certain groups. Okay, this shows the ratio of the single race to any mention for non-Hispanics from the using the May 2002 data. And as you can see here, if you use the only mention, it's pretty close to any mention, and most of the people, most of whites and blacks actually report one race. Asian, that's a little lower, still not too bad, gets worse with the Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders, and the worst is the American Indian Alaska Natives. So you can't just throw out anybody, if you're looking at this group, who reports more than one race. Okay. The problem, of course, also is for analyzing trends for single race groups. So what we did is we developed a race bridge approach to construct single race estimates for post-2003 data. Just briefly, Bureau of Labor Statistics actually sponsored a May 2002 special supplement to compare responses to the new and old sets of questions on the same respondents. NCI used some of this data to create a multiple imputation model to predict pre-2003 race given post-2003 race. And for non-Hispanics, we use this, for non-Hispanics that reported multiple races, because we usually analyze Hispanics as a group onto itself. This is based on some census crosstabs, gender by age, and the new race ethnicity by old race ethnicity. I'll show you here, this is 2003 data from the tobacco use supplement for the non-Hispanic American Indian Alaska Natives. We only any mention and the multiple imputation. It turns out here for just the smoking prevalence, they're quite close. A little bit more disparate with females, but with given the confidence intervals, they do overlap. However, that's just smoking cigarette smoking prevalence. We don't know that the context and further characterization of tobacco use patterns are also similar. So further work would have to compare these types of approaches to look at other questions of interest related to tobacco use. And a paper summarizing this approach is on our website. And then an application of this, looking at disparities across time, comparing American Indian and Alaska Natives to non-Hispanic whites as the subject of the second paper. Okay, these are pretty quick. Adjusting weights for partial longitudinal follow-up of survey samples is the third item. It turned out we had persons responding to a survey in that we conducted in 2001, 2002, and then we did another series in 2003. So we had overlap for some of the, about half the sample in February 2002 that were also in February 2003. This gave rise to a 22,000 overlap sample. So you could really use the responses from both studies as a limited longitudinal study. But the weights, of course, you couldn't use the original weights, so we developed new overlap weights. We started by using the 2003 weights, and the new weights were derived to reflect 2003 population for gender, race, ethnicity, age, and geography. Main sample weights and replicate weights use the same approach. And this just continues with some more. We have details on this at our website. We've considered region, gender, race, ethnicity, and age categories. And lastly, just want to say one word about the merging several years of data with different numbers of replicate weights. If it's within the sample design, you just blend the replicates and divide by the number of months. And then finally, if you have across sample designs that have different number of replicate weights, that use a stacking approach. And the example for 2003, 67, there were 80 replicate weights for 2003, 160 for 2006, 7. You create 240 replicates. and so forth, and then we adjust the replicate weights to account for the stacking and divide by the number of months, and there's a faith factor that you use with replicate weights, and that, oh, and that was changed from 4 to 16, but I guess that is the end. So I just wanted to also say I have some information on the tobacco use supplement, and I also have information if people are interested in tobacco. We put together a special supplement to preventive medicine last year on all the available national surveys that have information on tobacco use. And so that's available up here. Thank you.
Anybody has any questions? Yes.
Actually, a lot of the surveys that have previously used random digit dialing have moved to address-only sampling schemes, and so they're more male surveys now. And in terms, and that obviously will cover, will take care of worrying about whether or not you have access to a landline phone. Did that answer your question?
It did.
Okay.
Mean substitution, do you think it predisposes to regression of the mean?
Well, actually, that's what you're doing when you do compute an average value.
So,
clearly are.
All right, aren't you?
Artificially regressive.
Right, but aren't you skewing the results?
Well, it could be, and that's one of the weaknesses or the reasons why people aren't really satisfied with that approach, because it does skew your data and it also reduces your variability. Not skew your data, actually, it would make it more leptokernic.
That's why all of our statisticians will do multiple imputation in order to avoid that problem.